Now, according to the story, they are toiling for the Pharaoh. And if you remember the story about the straw and the bricks, they go to Pharaoh and they say, I mean, they have all kinds of nerve. They say, we want to celebrate our own holiday. You know, can we have a couple of days off? And the Pharaoh says, are you nuts? He says, you're not getting a day off. You know, you're going to have to make bricks without straw. Now, it doesn't mean that they're going to have to make bricks in a new way without the straw. You use straw and bricks, by the way, as a binder to make it stronger. What it means is they've got a quota. They're going to have to make the same number of bricks, but nobody's going to supply them with the chopped straw. They're going to have to chop their own straw and make just as many bricks as before. So it's extra work, right? Now, how are they going to get out of this bind? This tough Pharaoh won't let them go. The answer is God. If you'll remember, God speaks to Moses in the form of a burning bush. And he says, go to Pharaoh and tell him to let my people go. Moses is unsure of this. He says, how's this going to happen? I can't do this. And Pharaoh says, I've got some tricks for you. Don't worry. You know, actually God says to him, I've got some tricks for you. He says, take your staff and throw it on the ground. And it becomes a serpent. And then it turns back into a staff. He says, do that in front of Pharaoh. So Moses is going to be given divine powers. And he says, okay, I'll try. So he goes with Aaron, his brother, to Pharaoh and says, let my people go. Throws down his staff, right? Does the old boom. And what happens? It turns into a serpent, picks it up. Pharaoh is unimpressed. Doesn't do a thing for him. He calls in his magicians. Pharaoh's magicians come in, and they do the same thing. They throw down the staff. Apparently, it's the old snake trick. I mean, everybody knew it, you know? And only is Pharaoh, you know, sort of impressed when finally Moses throws down the staff, and then it devours the magician's serpents, right? So that, a little better. But now, eventually, you know the 10 plagues happens. You get these locusts and boils, and the river turns to blood, and nothing convinces the Pharaoh to let the people go. Nothing. Until the last plague. Now, if you remember the last plague, the firstborn are killed. And Moses is told to put lamb's blood on the doortop of all the Hebrews. So the angel of death will pass over their houses and not kill any of their firstborn. This is why we have Passover. It celebrates the passing over of the angel of death. And it happens. The firstborn are killed. And if you'll remember, Pharaoh's firstborn son is killed. Pharaoh's firstborn son is killed. And that's when Pharaoh allows the Israelites to leave. Only after the firstborn is killed. Now, is there any truth to this story? I mean, is there anything that makes you think it really happened? We don't have archaeological evidence. Is there internal evidence? The answer is, I think that something happened. I believe there is something historical related to the Exodus story. It's not as in the Bible, though. For example, the Bible says 600,000 men, not including the women and children, left Egypt. That's far too large. The whole population of Egypt was maybe 1 million. So you can't have 600,000 Hebrew men leaving. I think it may have been something happened and it got larger in the telling. Maybe it was only 600, maybe even 60. But I think something happened, and let me explain why. There are certain internal references that make it ring true. In the very beginning of the story, the midwives, the Hebrew midwives, are told by Pharaoh, watch the stones, watch the stones. Now, what does that mean, watch the stones? They are being instructed to kill every male child. Stones means a birthing stool. The Egyptians gave birth sitting down. Egyptian women gave birth seated on a stool, which was often two stones. It's a very reasonable way to give birth, by the way. Gravity assists you. Rather than lying down and pushing, gravity will help you pull the baby out. So this reference to watch the stones is pretty good. It's pretty good. It's sort of Egyptian. Also, where are these store cities built? Right? In the Delta. That's where Ramses moves the capital to. There's a lot of internal evidence here that there's something true to this story, right? One of them is called, one of the cities, remember, is called P. Ramses. So I think there's some element of truth to it. Now, what about the Pharaoh's firstborn? Well, remember Ramses' firstborn, Amun-Her-Kepchef, who doesn't become Pharaoh? He dies just about the time that scholars think the Exodus occurred. In other words, it is even possible that Ramses, who is probably the Pharaoh of the Exodus, loses his firstborn son during this Exodus period, year 17 of his reign. Amun-Her-Kepchef dies, we're pretty sure of that. And this may have been another shock to Ramses. He has had another defeat. Think about it. His wife dies, his son dies, other sons die, the Israelites leave Egypt, he pursues them even, if you remember, and his army is swallowed up, right, in the Sea of Reeds. It's not the Red Sea, that's a mistranslation. Ramses has had an awful lot of hard knocks, and I think it changed him forever. He never rode out to battle again. He stayed in Egypt. He dies an old man at the age of 86, crippled, terrible tooth decay, abscessed mandible that may have killed him at the age of 86. Ramses the Great wasn't always Ramses the Great. And I think it's important to view him as a person, a builder, a military man, a family man, but also somebody who is really in severe distress in the last years of his reign. But think of him as a person. I'll see you next time.